Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
We talked about being at your best, and no surprise, the two quarterbacks that will be representing their teams in the Super Bowl did just that. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We'll talk to ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes coming up in about a half hour, fresh off a two-hour NFL Live today, since they had to devote an entire hour to the possible retirement of Thomas Edward Patrick Brady. Because, Chris, boy, oh boy, nothing spins the take world around like the man in the arena himself.
No doubt about it. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with that and hearing from Tom Brady himself, but then also what the implications are for the Tampa Bay Bucs moving forward, because that is a team that's in championship mode right now. It's Super Bowl or bust for them based on the roster construction. So their path forward at quarterback, if Tom Brady does step away, gets a lot more tricky. And so I'm interested to see what happens with that as this offseason unfolds.
Yeah, that was a Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that went the full, if you build it, they will come with Tom Brady a couple of years ago when we started doing all of this. And Chris, I want to stick with that lens as we look at what we're facing here in the Super Bowl, because we saw that happen with Tom Brady, who was a free agent at the end of his time in New England. They didn't want to re-sign him back. They felt like they were ready to part ways and that he might be done with his best football. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who were getting done with Jameis Winston, brought him in as a free agent on a team that had a top five defense at the end of the season the year before and had two bona fide studs at wide receiver in Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. And the rest, as they say, is history. The year after that, we saw what the Rams did in a different fashion with Matthew Stafford. Instead of going out and getting him as a free agent, they trade three first-round picks. They bring him over, Von Miller, Odell Beckham Jr., and what they get out of it is a trip to the Super Bowl and an NFC Championship game, Chris, where Matthew Stafford in the fourth quarter went 11 for 14 for 121 yards and a touchdown, when you talk about going out and having your best in that spot. So back-to-back years where that happens for two teams that appeared championship ready, back-to-back years where we have the home team getting ready to host the Super Bowl the way Tampa did last year and the Rams are this year. Chris, are we on the verge of a trend where we're going to start to see NFL teams be this level of aggressive in the way that they pursue free agents in the offseason? Because it seems like we're starting to point that way.
Yeah, I think teams are being much more aggressive about trying to go out and get quarterbacks that can be difference makers, because that's what it takes to do high-level winning. I mean, all you have to do is reference the tweet put out there by Colts owner Jim Irsay Jr. last week, where he says it's obvious what you have to have in order to win in the postseason. You've got to have a quarterback and an offense that can score over 30 and a defense that can hold the other team under 30. And so I think there's an arms race literally in the National Football League to get one of those top 10 to 12 quarterbacks that you would be capable of having one of those offenses that can score at that clip once you get to the postseason. So that's what it's all about. And I think NFL teams are, you know, trying to get those results. And they're looking at draft picks a little bit differently too, Mike. That's the interesting part in all of this, because you have the emergence of analytics and NFL teams embracing that, having full-fledged analytics departments. I think they're seeing, with the hit rate in the first round being 50%, they don't necessarily value the draft picks at the top of the draft the same way that they used to. And so they're willing to fork over that kind of compensation if that means you get to get one of those top 10 quarterbacks the game has to offer. You usually don't see quarterbacks that are true franchise guys available on the trade market or in free agency. But I think we live in a different time in the NFL, and there are teams, based on where they're at with their roster construction, that are more willing to make those moves, whether it means trading away one of those guys or acquiring one of those guys.
Yeah, Chris, and I think that's a great point about the draft in all of this, because it's going to be a different strategy for some teams. The 49ers were in a very similar position to the Rams last year, inheriting and bringing over a quarterback that they decided just couldn't get it done. So instead of doing what the Rams did and going out and picking him out of the free agent pool, they went to the draft and did that because the timing worked out for them. They could get near and decided to fork over those picks to get to a young guy to give them the long runway. Some teams are not going to be in that position for one reason or another. So we want to look at those, Chris, the teams that may actually be in position to swing for someone and have to swing for someone the way the Rams did with Matthew Stafford. Go out and sign someone the way that the Buccaneers did with Tom Brady here. As far as the names on that list, I'm going to give you a list of these teams here. I want to get the team you think is most prime for this. The Philadelphia Eagles, the Denver Broncos, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Cleveland Browns, and the Indianapolis Colts all seem to be in that position where they might be a little far away for the draft to be something. They may have proven, like the Broncos did, that you're not capable of drafting well at that position or otherwise. Is there a team there that sticks out to you?
Yeah, man, it's the Indianapolis Colts. And I've said this about Aaron Rodgers needing to consider them strongly when it comes to, you know, if he wants to leave Green Bay. The Colts have a top 10 defense and a top 10 offense from a point standpoint. This team from top to bottom is ready to go. You have an MVP candidate in Jonathan Taylor, his emergence in his second season this year. You have an offensive line that's built like a brick wall, and you have a top flight defense led by DeForest Buckner and all-pro Darius Leonard. If you're the Colts, this is the time for you to get aggressive. And I talked about that tweet from Jim Irsay. I think that was the owner's way of giving license to Chris Ballard and Frank Reich to be ultra aggressive this offseason. Now, Gojo, I was on with Daria Mel on Saturday, and I floated this out to him. I'll say it to anybody that's willing to listen about my Colts theory. And they brought up the rebuttal that the Colts don't have a first-round draft pick. But we saw with the Detroit Lions and L.A. Rams last year, L.A. didn't have a first-round draft pick in 2021. They gave up a 2022 and a 2023 first-rounder in order to get the services of Matt Stafford. If you're Jim Irsay Jr., what do you care if it's a 2023 and a 2024 draft first-round draft pick if it means your team having a chance to get to the championship rounds in the NFL? I absolutely believe this is the time for them to go all in, whether it's with an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson. You fork over with whatever draft capital that you have to be able to bring over one of those guys, because you're in a space right now where you have the cap room to add in the supplemental pieces in veteran free agency as long as you get the quarterback. That's the biggest piece that's missing right now. If they get that, that takes them to a true title contender, in my opinion.
Yeah, Chris, couldn't agree more. You've been talking about the Colts on this show for a while now. At some point, people will step up to listen to that one, but that's the team that's been waiting in the wings. We've looked up at the end of every year and wondered, all right, you got all that cap space. What exactly are you waiting around to do here? The Broncos have been the other obvious name in that conversation, Chris, from what I talked about, proving they cannot draft well at that position. And we'll see if George Payton, who's taken over now, we know, in the actual duties of going out and buying the groceries from John Elway and company. But, Chris, the other one that we talked about during the break that I think is interesting in this category, and I think roster construction-wise on defense might be a little further away than this, but draft capital-wise is ready to party, is the Philadelphia Eagles. What they choose to do with those three first-round picks this year is going to go a long way in determining this. And we know, like I said, on defense, you've got some older bodies on that side that are starting to age out of their prime, some decisions you're going to have to make. But offensively, if you were to continue to build around the offensive line that was your strength this year, add receivers opposite Devontae Smith in that core, and all of a sudden plop a quarterback down there, you could start to change that team's course overnight.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think the Philadelphia Eagles is a prime landing spot for a veteran quarterback that's looking to get out of his current situation. I don't know how Howie Roseman and Nick Sirianni feel about Jalen Hurts and his potential to improve as a downfield passer. But Gojo, based on what I've seen from him in college and early on in his NFL career, I would label him as limited in that regard. So I would be looking to upgrade at the quarterback spot. And if it costs me, you know, three first-round draft picks over the next couple of years in order to do it, then that's something that I would consider, given that you have three first-round draft picks in this upcoming draft. So it just makes sense if you're the Eagles to go that direction, because you look at the landscape of that division, you're talking about the Dallas Cowboys really only being the only team that you would consider a true contender. It doesn't feel like it's a tough path in order to get to the tournament. And then the changing landscape when it comes to the NFC as a whole, with two top flight quarterbacks potentially leaving the conference, one via retirement, one via trade. I just feel like this is a prime opportunity for them as well if they want to be aggressive.
At Chris Caney 99, at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter, which team needs to make moves right now for a quarterback like Matthew Stafford? Coming up next, something we love way more than that is figuring out who the hell to lay all the blame on. And after this weekend, congratulations to the Bengals. We will have plenty of time to sing your praises. But coming up next, we got to find out where it all went wrong for the Kansas City Chiefs, the overwhelming favorite heading into conference championship weekend. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
A victory lap with Mina Kimes coming up in about 10 minutes here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty here on Canty and Golic Jr. But before we get to celebration, Chris, we got to do what we do best in sports media. We got to blame some folk. And I, for one, as you remember from Friday, didn't give the Bengals much of a chance, thought the Kansas City Chiefs would go out there and be who we thought they were. And instead, they let the Bengals off the hook in a big-time way in the second half Saturday. So if we've got to line up and blame somebody for what happened with Kansas City, where do you want to start with all that?
I got to start with Pat Mahomes, man. I mean, end-of-half, end-of-game situations was awful, dude. Like in overtime, that possession, he throws an interception, taking a shot down the field into double coverage. At the end of regulation, takes back-to-back sacks, makes what should have been a 27-yard field goal, a 40-yard field goal for Harrison Butker to make. You know, that's a higher degree of difficulty given what's on the line. But the biggest error that he made was right before halftime, after they drive the ball the length of the field. You got a golden opportunity to get points right there to make what was an 11-point lead at the time a 14-point lead. Instead, you decide you want to beg to your coach, lobby to him, to give you a shot with 5 seconds left on the clock and no timeouts. And rather than throwing the ball out of the end zone after your first read isn't there, you check it down to Tyreek Hill, who's got to make 2 defenders miss in the flat in order to get into the end zone. Just poor decision-making from Pat Mahomes at a level we hadn't really seen him at in the postseason, and it ultimately ended up costing his team. They blow a 15-point lead at home to – a 18-point lead at home to the Cincinnati Bengals. That's just one of those things that we didn't expect, but it happened, and it just – you have to lay the criticism at the feet of Pat Mahomes. If we're going to praise him for being the best quarterback in the National Football League – when you have the faucet shut off the way it was in the second half and in overtime by that Bengals defense like they did, then you got to put the blame on Pat.
Yeah, and Chris, I agree with you. When nothing changed all that much about the way the Bengals approached either, for everyone that's going to talk about the Bengals dropping 7 and 8 men into coverage in the second half, the way that they approached Pat, they did a bunch of that in the first half, and Patrick Mahomes and company were able to respond in those situations. And so, Chris, it was the same attempted spectacular feats from Patrick Mahomes that worked well in the first half. The touchdown to Travis Kelce, where he's bobbing and weaving, doing all the loop-de-loops down by the goal line, didn't work nearly as well in the second half when all of a sudden you have Hubbard and others coming there, jostling the ball out, knocking you back, and making it a more difficult field goal. It was the first time in the second half of the season, Chris, that we had seen Patrick Mahomes look like he was pressing in this spot. And we have seen it referenced. It really started at the end of the first half, that attempt down by the goal line, but it trickled all the way over into the second half where he kept trying to make the spectacular play in a lot of those spots, and it just wasn't there for him. A 98 QBR in the first half compared to 1.4 in the second half. There's going to be a lot of other elements of this, Chris, including the defense and what they were and weren't able to do against Joe Burrow in the second half. But if we're, like you said, it's got to start and end with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, it does. And what they were doing the first 3 drives of that game, they were patient in their approach. It went down the field methodically, and Pat Mahomes was taking what the defense gave him and allowing his receivers to do the heavy lifting along with the running backs Jerick McKinnon and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, it was clear that he was going to be content being able to put together drives. He was going to be patient. And then in the second half, that all went out of the window. But I think that was as a result of what happened at the end of the first half. The mentality changed for Pat Mahomes. He got a lot more impatient. He was chasing after that play that he made or the mistake that he made. And ultimately, it led to disastrous results. The pick by B.J. Hill on the screenplay, that's just something that cannot happen. And then the pick on the ball that he threw in overtime, that's something that can't happen as well. But on the whole, Gojo, when you look at their possessions in the second half and in overtime, they went punt, punt, interception, punt, punt, field goal, and then pick again. Like, that's not what we've seen from this Kansas City Chiefs over the last month and a half of football. This has been a very explosive offense, but yet they, I don't know, I guess they reverted back into the group that we saw in the first half of this season that struggled to find answers, especially against 2 shell coverage looks.
This is amazing. Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Chris, the streaks that came to an end in this loss for Patrick Mahomes, he had been perfect in all of these categories until this weekend. He had been 8-0 against quarterbacks in the postseason not named Tom Brady. That's insane. He had been 7-0 against former first-round picks at quarterback. He had been 5-0 against teams that had passed on him in the draft, and he had been 4-0 against quarterbacks 25 or younger heading into this weekend. That is a level of dominance that opens you up to all of this scrutiny. The other part of this, I will say, Chris, outside of what he managed to do, I got to put a light on the pass rush for the Kansas City Chiefs as well. Pressured Joe Burrow on 47% of his dropbacks in the first half compared to only 26 in the second half and overtime. And even in those spots, we saw Chris Jones draped all over him, Joe Burrow somehow managing to Houdini his way out. Chris, I'm not saying it's all fair. In normal world for 99% of quarterbacks, those are probably sacks. But in this game, that Chiefs pass rush knew you were going up against the overwhelming weakness of the Cincinnati Bengals team. And to only be able to log one sack against a team that had given up 61 already over the course of this postseason is wild and a complete misfire on an overwhelming advantage they were supposed to have.
Yeah, one sack and four quarterback hits, that's not enough for Chris Jones and Frank Clark. They get paid way too much money to have that level of production in a championship game. So the fact that they came up small, they deserve every bit of that criticism. And then you have to put some of that on Steve Spagnuolo as well. I mean, you understand the situation. You're up by 18 points. You've got to try to create defenses, create looks, knowing that you're going to get an offense that's going to be committed to dropping back and throwing the football. So be aggressive against a young quarterback in that spot and know that you have an offense on the other side that can match them for points if need be. But I just felt like they left the door cracked open for the Cincinnati Bengals based on what happened at the end of that first half. And then Joe Burrow and company were inspired, galvanized going into the second half, and that was the difference in the game.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $700 on average. Coming up next, if that was the difference when it came to the Chiefs' loss against the Bengals, then where did it turn in the nightcap, in the NFC Championship game here, and which coach got bailed out in a major way? We'll get to that next here with our guest Mina Kimes after this word from Wendy's. Guys, see, right now at Wendy's, you can see what all the hype's about with their new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real, natural-cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy, down to the very last fry. Or they'll replace them. These aren't just the typical fries you add to a meal. No, no, no. These are fries worth adding a meal to. Abandon the old, cold, and soggy. Ugh. Head to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy. At participating U.S. Wendy's, back with Mina Kimes next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Andy Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. And for more reaction to what we saw in Conference Championship Weekend in the NFL, fresh off not one but 2 hours of NFL Live, ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes joining us now on the hotline. Mina, how you holding up after that?
I'm doing good, especially because we had good games to talk about. I don't know if it quite lived up to the divisional round, but to get close games going down to those types of outcomes is all you can ask for.
Certainly got very close to that, though, based on some of the final scores. But Mina, looking at this weekend, supposed to be the best and the brightest, the final four in the NFL, and I feel like a lot of the time we spent talking about this after the fact has come down to some strange coaching decisions. How surprised were you by some of the best coaches that we have in this league and the decisions that they made?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Okay, starting with the AFC Championship, I think that one was less about whether or not to go for it or that sort of thing, although obviously at the end of the half, the Chiefs made a crucial error. But it was more about adjustments, specifically the defensive adjustments by Bengals defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo, which were fantastic, and then the Chiefs' inability to adjust in response to that. Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, and then, of course, you know, Patrick Mahomes in terms of execution. Whereas in the Rams 49ers games, there was just a slew of confusing decisions on both sides of the football, the wild Sean McVay challenges. And I just talked about this on NFL Live. I've had some of Kyle Shanahan's conservatism, in terms of going for it, one of those happening after the challenge. Those are the kinds of things that can swing games. And I think when we look at those two coaches, both didn't exactly cover themselves in glory.
Mina, looking at the two quarterbacks on the winning side of Conference Championship weekend, Joe Burrow and Matt Stafford, I know we're going to analyze this Super Bowl matchup for the next couple of weeks and overanalyze it, but moving forward, who has more pressure on them going into Super Bowl Sunday? Is it Matt Stafford or Joe Burrow?
Oh, well, it's Matt Stafford. I mean, Joe Burrow is so young, right? And this is a nascent. I mean, we talk about the turnaround, but this team has a young core. They're building. I mean, there's some free agents they got to pay. Jesse Bates, for example. But, you know, Joe Burrow's doing all of this with what everybody can see is a clearly substandard offensive line. This is a team that's going to get better. Whereas with Matt Stafford and the Rams, everybody knows that they went all in on this season. And while actually they're going to retain a lot of their players too next year, the roster's probably never going to be as good as it is now. So to me, this gives them their best shot at winning a Super Bowl with the current roster.
Kane Angola Jr. talking to Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst. Mina, has Matthew Stafford reversed all the bad things that we've ever said about him, even up until this point, without winning a Super Bowl?
Well, I think he already did before this game, you know, just to have kind of clutch performances in the playoffs. You know, what you always heard about him, the negatives were stat padding, not playing well in the postseason, not delivering in high leverage situations, and he's already proven all of that wrong. It's very hard to win a Super Bowl. I don't think he has to win a Super Bowl to prove that he belongs amongst the league's great quarterbacks, but if he does, he certainly will enter a different conversation.
Mina, we're weeks into the hiring cycle with as many as 9 coaching vacancies that were out there at one point. Now looking at 4 of those vacancies being filled, none of them have been black coaches. If that trend continues, what does that say about the measures that the NFL put in place to improve diversity in decision-making positions in these clubs?
I think it says something that we already knew before the measures were put in place, which is you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't make it drink. They're woefully insufficient, but the reality is you can give as many incentives or sticks as needed to try to encourage ownership in front offices as well to improve diversity so that it better reflects the workforce. But you can't change, you know, inherent biases, networks, things like that, and that's a shame. And I think there's still some coaching vacancies left, as you mentioned. There's some candidates that are more than qualified. Names you've heard throughout this cycle, ranging from Byron Leftwich to Todd Bowles, to Eric Bieniemy, to Jim Caldwell, to Patrick Graham, the list goes on. And it would be a real shame and I think worthy of condemnation if the numbers continue to stay as low as they've been.
Kane Angola Jr. talking to Mina Kimes with us here on the show. Mina, part of the reason that you guys had the 2-hour NFL Live special today was because of the news this weekend. Adam Schefter and Jeff Darlington reporting Tom Brady's impending retirement. We're obviously still waiting to hear that from Tom Brady's camp. There's been some pushback there. But if this was the end for Brady, do we even have things left to say, Mina? Have we run out of superlatives for a guy whose career it feels like we've celebrated a number of different times during it as well?
Well, the thing that I kind of ended up talking about today a little bit, Mike, and that I've been thinking about is just marveling at Brady's status now as a player. Because we've already talked a lot about what he's accomplished, what he came from, what he overcame, all of that. And it's probably never going to be matched. Heck, if you watch the Chiefs this weekend, to me, that was the team and the quarterback and coach you thought might actually have a chance of putting together a string of Super Bowls, and it was a good reminder of how hard it is to attain that level of consistency. But what we haven't really gotten a chance to talk about until this point is how rare it is for a quarterback or any football player to leave the game playing at the highest level. I mean, we are a week removed from Tom Brady throwing the ball 55 yards down the field to Mike Evans and almost leading another insane comeback, leading the league in passing yards, probably finishing second in MVP. That is just yet another unbelievably unusual aspect to Tom Brady's career, and I know that's one that I'm going to be thinking about if he does walk away.
Mina, one of the things that happened over Conference Championship weekend with Sean McVay winning and getting the Rams back to a Super Bowl is people highlighting the brilliance of his coaching career through the first 5 seasons and the fact that he's taken a team to 2 Super Bowls with 2 different starting quarterbacks, but we don't seem like we're paying a lot of attention to Zach Taylor and the job that he's done with the Cincinnati Bengals. Is he getting the credit that he deserves as a head coach in this league? And where exactly would you have him amongst the best head coaches in the National Football League?
You know, I've heard his name in the conversation for Coach of the Year because of the turnaround, so I think he's getting credit for just simply being in that conversation. What they've done with the offense, the adjustments midseason to put more of it on Burrow's shoulders, I thought waited a little bit too long. But, you know, candidly, I would not put him amongst the league's best coaches, just being honest with you. I thought the defensive adjustments this game by Lou Anarumo were absolutely brilliant. I thought the Bengals leaned way too heavily on the run earlier and kind of depended on Joe Burrow's magnificence to bail them out, especially with those scrambles he had. But to me, this when I watched the Bengals and, you know, tried to think through, okay, what are all the reasons why they won this unbelievable game? I would say it's much more about the defensive coaching players and then Joe Burrow himself.
Certainly. Every angle of this upcoming game going to get dissected over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Check out NFL Live, 4 o'clock Eastern, Monday through Friday. And, of course, download, subscribe, and review the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcast. Mina, we appreciate it, bud. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye, guys.
Again, Mina Kimes joining us here on the show. Coming up next, though, let's talk about something that Chris brought up there. This current hiring cycle of NFL coaches had 9 openings, and so far we are seeing a similar trend and an interesting name continue to bounce around in these coaching searchings and interviews. We will get to all of that here next. Canny and Gola Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
The ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. Presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. It's Canty and Gola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Gola Jr. and Chris Canty. And man, Chris, it has been amazing going back. We saw Josh McDaniels introduced as the Las Vegas Raiders head coach today. Made it to the podium there, so no fear of anything that happened in Indianapolis before this if you were a Raiders fan like Jason Fitz, who joined us. But that was a job that we had heard closely linked to Jim Harbaugh. Remember all those reports coming out after the college football season about the interest of Mark Davis, their owner, and Jim Harbaugh, the former NFL head coach who's got some ties to that organization. But Chris, seeing his name pop up now, potentially around the Miami Dolphins, supposedly interviewing, according to Jeremy Fowler, with the Minnesota Vikings and there being legitimate interest there. It's been amazing to see this go from something that was just seeming like a one-off to now him legitimately with his hat in the ring for a return to the NFL.
Yeah, Gojo, when we heard this at the beginning of the NFL hiring cycle, we thought this could be a ploy for Jim Harbaugh to leverage a bigger deal at Michigan, his alma mater, after he finally got over that hump that is Ohio State and got his team to the college football playoff. It just didn't seem like a time where Jim Harbaugh would openly entertain a return to the NFL, but it seems like that's really happening now with him doing the Zoom interview with the Minnesota Vikings, who just hired their new general manager last week, and then potentially the link between the Miami Dolphins with their owner Stephen Ross being a proud Michigan alum. It seems like Jim Harbaugh is letting everybody around the NFL know that he's open for business and he's open to being courted in order to take over somebody's program. So that would be a name that we didn't anticipate being thrown in the mix with the 5 remaining coaching vacancies, but certainly it's a guy that's proven at every stop that he's had, college and pro, that he knows how to do high-level winning, and he can get you there really quickly.
Yeah, and I think also it may be coming clearer, because I'm with you. I thought this was just the ticket to a payday, but this could be the line of thinking that we saw in part be the reason Brian Kelly left Notre Dame, where Jim Harbaugh may have looked at his best season at Michigan and wondered how much better it's really going to get. Saw how it went in the college football playoff in the semifinal game against Georgia and said, if this is my best team and we caught Ohio State slipping on this year and all these good things happen and that might be the best it's going to be, then I got to remember how it was in 2020 when everyone there wanted to run me out of town and my stock didn't seem so high. So this could be Jim Harbaugh shopping himself at what he believes to be could be his zenith here as a coach with his stock at this current juncture at Michigan. It's just weird to me, Chris, because it's the alma mater factor. Like, you know this, for either of us, looking at Notre Dame for me or for Virginia for you, it's different when it's the place that you went and put blood in the ground at the way Jim Harbaugh did. And to have that kind of success, it's so counterintuitive, but it's a reminder about all this. It's the business that comes first.
No doubt about it. And you also got to leverage your success with being able to create more job security for you if that's where you're at now, or if that's at another place. And like you said, you know, a couple of years ago, the AD for Michigan went and reworked Jim Harbaugh's contract because they weren't having a level of success that they wanted. Now he used some of those resources to go out and hire assistant coaches in order to modernize the program and to better relate to the players. But the fact still remains, they asked him to give back some money. The next step would have been firing him had this season not gone the way that it did. So, yeah, if you're Jim Harbaugh, you're thinking, why wouldn't I consider going to another organization that's going to give me a little more leash than what I have currently at Michigan based on what I did this past season? Something to think about. I ultimately think he stays in the college ranks, but his name is being floated, and that is an option, and that's something that we got to take seriously.
Kane Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. I was firmly in that camp, Chris. I feel like I'm 60-40. He leaves for the NFL now. There's just been so much smoke on this. You wonder if at some point there's got to be fire. Minnesota could be an interesting landing spot as, again, Jeremy Fowler, our ESPN NFL reporter, putting that out there that the two did complete that Zoom interview, that there seems to be legitimate interest. So we'll keep an eye on all that, Chris. But you mentioned this when we talked to Mina Kimes in the last segment. We are now four job hirings into what was a nine-position offseason, nine NFL head coaching vacancies, and so far, none of those head coaching hires have been filled by a person of color. We know that this has been an initiative for the NFL, both in the front office roles and in the coaching roles that they've tried to incentivize with draft picks, things of that nature. Chris, so far, none of it working here. What kind of message does that send?
Well, it's not a good one when it comes to black assistant coaches and when it comes to, you know, coaches that are minority candidates, whether it be women that are now assistant coaches in the National Football League or just persons of color. This is not a message that the NFL wants out there. This is not something that they want to, you know, have front and center when it comes to the storylines that their fan bases follow. But the fact that remains, the NFL owners aren't moving when it comes to being able to put people of color, black coaches, black general managers in positions of power. Now, we did see Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, general manager of the Minnesota Vikings, get hired, so that's a step in the right direction. But when it comes to coaches, Gojo, it still remains a problem. And I'm not quite sure what the NFL can do beyond the measures that they've put in place in order to try to bridge the gulf where we have between white coaches and black coaches being hired. It's not that you don't have any qualified candidates. It's just that these coaches get down the line in the interview process, and for whatever reason, they don't get the job. Now, we heard what happened with the Jacksonville Jaguars situation and Byron Leftwich wanting Trent Baalke out as their general manager, and now that organization seemingly has pivoted to other candidates, interviewing Rich Bisaccia amongst other people. But this is a problem that the NFL is going to have to try to find a way to deal with, Gojo, because at the end of it, there are qualified candidates out there that are not getting the opportunity to lead these organizations as the head coach.
Yeah, and Chris, I think it's going to grow increasingly more frustrated, especially as we see the rise of more black assistants, especially on the offensive side of the football. We've heard the pipeline excuse a million times for all this, and before it used to just be off-seasons campaigning for Eric Bieniemy, but now as we've got Byron Leftwich involved in the mix, and those numbers are only going to continue to grow. In addition to all of the defensive coordinators that we've talked about and all this, in a hiring cycle where we've heard so many names floated in the interview process, ultimately, if no one's actually getting taken to the dance, this is going to continue to have to be a focal point. And unfortunately, I think what Mina Kimes brought up is going to continue to be the unfortunate line in this is you can lead a horse to water, but it's going to be hard to make him drink if that's ultimately not the decision that any of the 31 owners plus the Packers are willing to go out here and make. Plenty more on the NFL coaching searches as we go along, but coming up next, we'll start to look at the two quarterbacks that are going to get to take center stage coming up in the upcoming Super Bowl, next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus.